good evening to you all. It's so great to see you again. I think all of you have been here for previous talks. And yes, indeed, this is the third in this series on Song of the Jewel Mirror Samadhi by the 9th century Chinese master Dongshan. And it's called Hokyo Zanmai in Japanese, in case you ever hear that. And as we've seen, it's not a readily accessible text, but with a little decoding, we can begin to enter Dongshan's world and see that maybe it's not so different from our own more than a millennium later. So just to review a little, as you know, the jewel mirror of the title is our Buddha nature. It's our nature unbound by conditioning and unobscured by greed, hatred, and delusion, which is a state of samadhi. When we see with our Dharma eye, we see Buddha nature reflected all around us, in each other, in all beings, sentient and insentient. So there's that sense of mirroring, you know, where our Buddha nature is being mirrored all around us. And as we've seen, Dongshan uses a lot of poetic and figurative language in ways that allude to what are called the two truths, the realm of the absolute and the undifferentiated, and often called the darkness, and the realm of the relative or particular, everyday life, referred to as the light. So in the dark, everything merges, right? You can't see distinction. And in the light, we see differences. And yet, of course, these two realms, these two truths, aren't separate. They exist simultaneously. They coexist. In the darkness, even though we can't see them, the distinctions are still there. And in the light, everything, even though we see distinctions, everything is still connected and interdependent. Just like in that other poem that we often chant, that we chant more often than this one, Harmony of Difference and Unity, it says, right in light there is darkness, but don't take it as darkness. Right in darkness there is light, but don't see it as light. So there's that yin-yang symbol, right, with the white dot on the black side and a black dot on the white side. So you kind of see the Taoist influence in both those poems coming out. So Dongshan's message is that we have the capacity to see deeply into this reality, the reality called ta-ta-ta, thusness or suchness in English, when we are fully present to our moment-to-moment experience in zazen, in sitting, standing, walking, in any moment of our lives. We have that capacity. And in that awakening to that reality, we are free from suffering. It might be fleeting, or it might be have some stability, or, you know, but in that moment, we are free from suffering. So last time we met, I mean, it's been a month already. you might not remember a whole lot of the details, but we looked at that core section of the poem where Dongshan describes his sort of template for practice and realization, known as the five ranks or the five positions. And I showed you that diagram, and I said I was going to post a PDF of it on the on the website talk posting, and I did not do that. Maybe I'll still try and do that, because it's a helpful diagram. So after that, Dongshan pauses to emphasize just the importance of this teaching so far. So let's pick up where we left off, which I hope you have your printed out text with you. We're going to pick up halfway through verse 11. So 11.5. And it goes, communing with the source, travel the pathways, embrace the territory, and treasure the road. Excuse me. The Chinese Zen master and teacher Sheng Yan translates that first line, penetrate the goal and you will fathom the way. So really, whatever the translation is, those two verbs are actually the same. whether it's communing and travel or penetrate and fathom, it's the same word. It can mean penetrate, as in to understand a meaning, or follow, as follow a path. So we could say penetrate the source or essence, follow the path, something like that. And then the next phrase, excuse me, embrace the territory and treasure the road. In Japanese, it's kyotai kyoro, and kyo and kyo, again, it's the same word, but the translators say embrace and treasure. So it's just two different kind of nuances to the same word. It means, you know, embrace, value, treasure. So something like take up and embrace the territory or the path. So you could sum up both those lines by just saying penetrate the source and embrace the path. You wanted to just compress it. And then there's this next tricky line. This is verse 12. Respecting this is fortunate, do not neglect it. I looked over a few translations, and I don't think this one is very good, this line. Sheng Yan offers a different reading, and he says, to be wrong is auspicious, do not oppose it. To be wrong is auspicious, do not oppose it. He says this character in the Chinese can mean something wrong, in other words, delusion, but it can also mean an interaction between two things, like delusion, enlightenment. So remember in that diagram of the five ranks, there's that interaction between the black and the white and the shifting emphases in the different positions. So I think the point here is that it's through our delusion we awaken. There can't be awakening without delusion, in a sense. And in that interaction is our practice, is our practice. And Dogen, of course, always says, you know, practice, realization are not separate things. Right? So we should not oppose or reject delusion. That's not quite it. We use it to open our Dharma eye. Does that make some sense? I think that's the meaning of this line. So he goes on to describe this sort of paradoxical nature of the jewel mirror samadhi. He says, naturally real yet inconceivable, it is not within the province of delusion or enlightenment. So thusness, whenever we have it, most of the time when he says it, it means thusness, is natural, it's true, and at the same time it's awesome, it's inconceivable. And it's beyond the duality of delusion and enlightenment. So it's not a matter of striving after an enlightenment experience or of vanquishing delusion. Either one of those is too limited. So in our days and months and years of steady practice, we integrate that experience of the Absolute with its expression in the world of everyday life, right? Okay, next verse is number 13. With causal conditions, time and season, quiescently it shines bright. In its fineness, it fits into spacelessness. In its greatness, it is utterly beyond location. So again, it, we could call it thusness, we could call it Jhumir Samadhi, through the ever-changing conditions, right? Of causal conditions, time and seasons, that light of awareness shines, illuminates our lives just as they are, right? Just as they are, boundless, right now in space and time. Both more minute and more vast than we can perceive or comprehend. When I read this, a passage from Dogen in Genjo Koan came to mind. So I'm going to read you a little Dogen. Genjo Koan, actualizing the fundamental point. Here's how Dogen talks about it. When you sail out in a boat to the midst of an ocean where no land is in sight and view the four directions, the ocean looks circular and does not look any other way. But the ocean is neither round nor square. Its features are infinite in variety. It's like a palace. It's like a jewel. It only looks circular as far as you can see at that time. All things are like this. Though there are many features in the dusty world and the world beyond conditions, you see and understand only what your eye of practice can reach. Great line. You see and understand only what your eye of practice can reach. In order to learn the nature of the myriad things, you must know that although they may look round or square, the other features of oceans and mountains are infinite in variety. Whole worlds are there. It is so not only around you, but also directly beneath your feet or in a drop of water. So our view is always only partial because we only have this particular human kind of body. We can't see what a bee can see or smell what a dog can smell, right? It's always just we have to know that our view is always limited and at the same time reality is boundless. Whole worlds exist in drops of water. In galaxies beyond the reach of our eyesight, and in the heart and mind of each person we meet, whole worlds exist. That's a pretty humbling thing. It's good to be that humble, to realize that. And then he says, this is that great line, a hair's breadth deviation will fail to accord with the proper attunement. Right, hair's breadth deviation. As soon as you hang on to a fixed view, already you're out of tune, out of alignment. Already you're stuck in the past or in anticipation of the future, and you're missing the full scope of this moment right now. Sometimes I suggest to people who are just starting their practice, you know, to just notice when their mind, the three different things their mind is likely to do, to jump into the future, worrying about the meeting or the job interview tomorrow, or jumped back to the past, what I should have said in that conversation yesterday, or fantasy, right? La La Land. And just to notice when your mind does any of those three things, just the noticing helps you come back to the present. I often suggest that to new people. Pretty much covers the ground. Hair's breadth deviation. There's another great Chan poem that Dongshan would likely have known. It's called the Xin Xin Ming, or the Verses of Faith and Mind, by Sung San, the third patriarch. And it's not in our liturgy, but it is chanted in Rinzai lineages. And it begins like this. The great way is not difficult for those not attached to preferences. When neither like nor dislike arises, all is clear and undisguised. Separate by the smallest amount, hair's breadth, however, and you are as far from it as heaven is from earth. Right? Hair's breadth's deviation, you're as far as heaven is from earth. I imagine that all of us have experienced that slippage. You can be going along quite pleasantly in your daily life, and suddenly you just desperately want things to be different. You really need a coffee right now, and the kind you like is just not available. Like when our car broke down on the way to the Zendo yesterday, and we had to call for BCAA to come and tow us, and they towed us to a Tim Hortons rather than a Starbucks. That was a brief hardship for Michael. We got the car back today. And it could have been worse. Or someone else grabs that parking space you had your eye on. Or it could be something more momentous. Someone else got that job you'd set your heart on. Or your beloved announces they don't want to be with you anymore. You know, you just that slip. You're plunged from the heavenly realm into the hell realm or the hungry ghost realm. It's amazing how fast it can happen, right? Just sitting in Zazen, let alone daily life, you can just slip so quickly. But the good news is sometimes we can let go just as fast. Sometimes we can see that slip and just let it go. And you wonder, what was that? It's gone now. It's just gone. Or something will jolt us out of that neurological rut. You know, we spin our wheels in neurological, there really are actual, you know, patterns, neurological patterns in our brain. And we spin our wheels in them and make them deeper. But sometimes something will just jolt us right out and open our hearts and minds right up. And the world will suddenly appear completely different. The other good news is that with steady practice, we can stabilize our reactivity. We can be less blown about by the eight worldly winds. I love the eight worldly winds. Pleasure and pain, loss and gain, praise and blame, fame and disrepute. You know, somehow just knowing them, I can just say, whoops, yeah, praise and blame. You know, you can catch yourself getting snagged or blown about by those eight worldly winds. But, you know, little by little, our practice does stabilize us, I think. Doesn't mean we won't get knocked off, but a little bit more stable. And now he addresses a kind of perennial debate. I would say 14.5 now, halfway through verse 14. He says, now there are sudden and gradual in which teachings and approaches arise. Once basic approaches are distinguished, then there are guiding rules. But even though the basis is reached and the approach comprehended, true eternity still flows. So what Dongshan's talking about here are those often stereotyped schools of Zen, of sudden awakening and gradual awakening, Rinzai and Soto. One emphasizing a sudden, dramatic experience of awakening, and the other gradual cultivation through practice. One, a kind of breakthrough experience of the conditioned mind falling away, and the other, more of a gradual polishing, like wiping the dust from the mirror. The Dongshan saying that once those basic approaches are developed and methods may be skillful, but true eternity still flows. They're just skillful means. And those distinctions merge in the jewel mirror samadhi. I've always thought, how could awakening be anything but sudden, right? Because it happens in the boundless present, in the moment. And at the same time, how could it be anything but gradual, maintained, refined, and integrated over years of living in this world of suffering beings? So how could it not be sudden and gradual? Just two different, turns of the view. And, I think the best Rinzai and the best Soto teachers really recognize both and use both skillfully in their teaching. So now we are on verse 16, where Dongshan says, outwardly still, while inwardly moving, like a tethered colt, a trapped rat, the ancient sages pitied them and bestowed upon them the teaching. So Shengyan says Dongshan is referring here to the monks who might have very strong concentration. Maybe they're a little self-satisfied in how deep their samadhi is, but they have suppressed their deluded and reactive mind. So it kind of can just erupt when they are off their guard. Here's what Shengyan said. He says, samadhi produces a calm and stable mind. Some wisdom may manifest. It enhances strong faith in the practice. So we do need concentration is one of the Eightfold Path, but that alone is not, he says, that alone is not Chan or Zen. The mind is contained, delusions are tamed, but the potential for them to arise is still there. An active volcano may look beautiful and serene, but at any moment it can erupt. Do you ever feel like you're sitting really still, but actually inside you're kind of like a volcano? It's a great image. When samadhi power subsides, delusions will reemerge, he says. I think these lines could also apply to when we find ourselves sitting kind of rigid and tense. We're not moving, we're really trying not to move, but inside we're in turmoil. I wouldn't say it's samadhi. We're just kind of hanging on for dear life, sitting there on our cushions. Tethered colts, trapped rats. Unable to move, but trembling inside, heart pounding. Sometimes we might feel like that in our lives. We can't fight or flee, fight, flight, freeze. If we can't fight, we can't flee, we freeze. Sometimes Zazen can feel like that. Can we make it till the bell rings? Can that person sitting still beside us tell what a mess we are inside? Isn't that how so many people go through life? Putting on a brave face, or a cheery face, never letting on how vulnerable they really feel, or we really feel. And some tend to go into fight mode. when we feel threatened, and some tend to flee or avoid. And then some tend to freeze, like the tethered colt. But each one of these MOs, ways of coping, is based on a me against the world stance, our belief that our separate self needs to be defended. So, of course, those ancient sages took pity on us and taught another way to be in this world with our suffering. They taught us to sit upright in this dignified posture, not with gritted teeth, but with a spacious, non-judgmental awareness of our moment-to-moment experience. Thusness, right? Just our lives as they are. Seeing whatever arises as due to causes and conditions and subject to change. We can be less identified with all that content that arises, less driven by it. But the jewel mirror samadhi goes beyond some sort of temporary achievement of deep concentration. So minute it can penetrate the finest cracks in our armored selves, and so vast nothing is excluded. The great Japanese woman poet Izumi Shikibu in the 10th century wrote this poem. Watching the moon at dawn, solitary, mid-sky, I knew myself completely, no part left out. That's our practice, no part left out. So Dongshan continues, we're on 17 now. According to their delusions, they called black as white. When erroneous imaginations cease, the acquiescent mind realizes itself. If you want to conform to the ancient way, please observe the sages of former times. So he's saying when we're caught in that delusion that our existence is separate and substantial, we call black white. We call the absolute relative. We flip it. We can't see that we exist within this matrix of interconnectedness. But when we see into the, when we look into the jewel mirror samadhi, the mirror, then our delusions, the three poisons, right, greed, hatred, and ignorance, are transformed into the medicine we need to heal ourselves and the world. So greed, released from self-clinging, opens into compassion and caring, you know. So desire, that greed, desire, never satisfied. Self-clinging falls away, and it's compassion and caring. Aversion or hatred, released from self-clinging, opens to what's called discriminating wisdom, right? Wisdom with insight. And delusion opens to, with self-clinging dropping away, opens into a kind of clear-eyed equanimity. So that's where our very delusions turned and opened are our way, our way of opening, our way of opening our Dharma eye. And when those habit patterns drop away, that clear light of awareness shines equally on all things, like the white egret in the moonlight. Remember from the beginning of the poem? So this is the ancient way, the way of the sages of old, that Dongshan urges us to follow. So We've come this far. We're 3/4 of the way through the poem. I would be interested to hear how you think or feel that seeing into the jewel mirror samadhi can support you in daily life in relieving suffering. It's not something you can really think your way rationally into, but I think these ancient words and images from poem texts like this poem and others like Genjo Koan or the Xinxing Ming that I read the beginning of, I think they can kind of help to prime the pump, or perhaps to just incubate or gestate the little seeds of awakening so that we can be more open to experiencing or seeing directly with our Dharma eye in the moment. And it might be when we're on our zafu, but more than likely it'll be not on our zafu. And it'll be something that takes us by surprise. Because sometimes we need to be taken by surprise when our defenses are a little loose and permeable. And just when we're least expecting it, as Dogen says, the whole sky will turn. And then we continue on our pilgrimage through life, accompanied by the sages of the past, maintaining our practice, nothing special. Nothing special, just everyday life, everyday mind. So, I'd be happy to take questions if you have any, but I would also like to hear from you. So I'd like to hear what resonates for you in this poem and what you feel would kind of, you know, be a little nugget that would support you in your practice. So please go ahead and somebody unmute and say something.